Welcome in to the Point to Post podcast. I'm your point guard, Toby Miller, with the postman, Eric Sweet. Sweet, how are things going in the world of fifth grade, sixth grade tackle football? That's all that really matters.
So we are recording Saturday morning here, September 6th, 7th. And the first game for the fifth and sixth grade is Sunday the 8th. So big weekend ahead here. Big Sunday, you know, NFL can just take a back seat because fifth and sixth grade tackle football has got to happen. So, yeah, Sunday is the big day. First game of the season. Hopefully the kids are ready. I know that the last 4 or 5 weeks here of practice have been long for this guy right here. So it's time for some games and some action. So, yeah, we open up this weekend with it, man. And the kids are excited. I know that for a fact.
Did you, speaking of NFL, did you watch any of the game last night? Did you watch a little bit of that at all? The Friday night Brazil game? Like, what in the world? That's how you know football has such a stranglehold on, like, the American market. Is like, we're gonna send two of our marquee teams over to Brazil on a Friday and it's gonna do great. Like,
yeah, I'm gonna talk a little bit about football here. We're gonna talk preseason stuff here in a minute, but yeah, you're right. When the NFL can just send two teams to Brazil and it's a sold out and it's on national television and everybody watches every single moment of it, you know where basketball falls in the world. And we can try all we want to send NBA teams somewhere else, but it ain't the same thing like the NFL. That's a different power, that's for sure.
The turf was pretty bad last night. I don't know if you saw Jordan Love got injured on, like, the last play of the game, and people are on the internet complaining about the turf and everything else. And I think it's funny how everybody has an excuse or a blame for everything. Like, why is the NFL sending these guys over here on the turf? It's simply because they can. I mean, they can. They can send you over. They can send you wherever they want. You're going to watch. The players are going to play, and they want to grow their national brand. And I think that kind of parlays a little bit into what we're going to talk about today with preseason drills, in the fact that sometimes when people are in positions of authority, they can just simply tell you what to do, and you have to do it. And that's one thing that I think this upcoming generation struggles with. Like, there doesn't always have to be a reason why we're doing this. We are doing it because you are being told to do it. And that's life. That's when you have a boss. That's when you have a family. Sometimes family members need things done and there's no reason why you have to do it. There's no explanation. You just have to do it because they need it. Sweet. Do you agree with that? I think it's funny how people always come up with excuses and are ridiculing people in positions of a power and authority. And I'm like, it's not like that.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've been coaching now, head coach for 16 years, and I watch a lot of that stuff and see a lot of that stuff. And it's really turned into everything that you do or we do or NFL, like, it has to have this purpose to it. And then the minute the purpose fades, like, if Jordan Love doesn't go down, they don't have anything to talk about. Like, let's get that straight too. Like, yeah. Last play of the game, he's keeping himself up, trying to make a play. I think I saw that this morning.
Yeah. Yep.
He's trying to do something out of the ordinary and he got caught wrong and hurt himself. And sometimes, like, you can't plan for those types of drills. But as coaches, sometimes we try to create chaos drills for those reasons that you got to be able to think on your feet. Not everything can be perfect. And so, yeah, it's definitely unique. I think if Jordan Love didn't get hurt, though, I don't think there'd be anything talking about the turf and all that kind of stuff. But as far as what you said about being told what to do and when to do it, it's definitely changing a little bit. And, you know, we're going to talk about some drills and some things I try to change over my years. But ultimately in preseason, it's kind of like just getting ready, you know, getting things up, getting shots up and things of that sort. So we'll dive into preseason here, but to end the preseason football talk and kind of get into basketball, you know, like I told you, Toby, I've been a coach for 16 years. You took over last year. And I remember calling you the first Friday night of high school football, asking how you were doing. And any head coach that listens to this, that's basketball, had those years where they were terrified to go watch Friday night football. And I remember being young and thinking to myself, like, I can't go watch this. What if one of my players goes down? And it's football, and you have to support your players, and you have to go. I lost a player here just the first week of the season. He won't get back to mid-January. injuries happen, and it took me probably 10 years to like enjoy going to Friday night football because I was terrified for my players and I wanted them for my season selfishly. And so any young coaches that are listening, like, it's okay to be nervous to go to Friday night football games. Like, try to enjoy it though. But yeah. So with that being said, that's kind of, as coaches, I don't know if you felt that way last year, but I definitely felt that way for the first 5, 6 years of my coaching career. Was like, I just want them in the gym with me so I can protect them. Mm-hmm. Like my little babies. I just want to, like, come to the gym. We'll stay in here and shoot jump shots. And so with that being said though, like, we'll get into days and times, all that kind of stuff. But how did you feel that first Friday night football game last year, Toby?
I've come to peace with the fact that you kind of have to disassociate with the injury worry. And what I've tried to embrace, especially, like, okay, simple things like watching my kids on Friday night football, and this is going to sound dumb, but watching the Cleveland Guardians, I'm like, fully embrace being a fan. Just sit there, be mindless, cheer, have fun, root them on, because you worrying about this is only going to be detrimental to your psyche, to your enjoyment of the event. And I had so much fun on opening night.
Awesome.
Excuse me, watching a couple of my basketball kids, the quarterback and the receiver, actually connected for, I don't want to get this wrong, I want to give Tommy and Landon their props, I think it was 3 touchdowns. So I really enjoyed that. And in contrast to my first year, I was just holding my breath every time a basketball player was getting hit or making a tackle. I was just like, this is what it is. You love these kids. You don't have a job without these kids. This is their choice.
Yep.
They're going out there. They're trying to highlight their abilities. It's hard to go out there in front of that many people on a Friday night and be subject to the ridicule that we talked about earlier on in the show. So just be a fan. Enjoy being a fan.
Correct. Hey, so we hit this a couple episodes ago. You know, we talked about our kids being multiple sport athletes. I have a lot of kids that play football. I have a lot of kids that play soccer. This year is probably one of my bigger years of kids not playing a fall sport. So that's something that's when we talk here about preseason, me and you are going to have a lot of different things that happen because of those, that scenario. The first question I got for you, and I've bounced, like I said, 16 years, man, up and down, up and down. Are you an after school preseason workout guy? Are you a morning preseason workout guy? Are you an evening preseason workout guy? I've done all of it because I've tried to adjust to my kids and who can get them in. And it's hard no matter what way you do it. So have you set kind of the way you're doing it right now this preseason? And was it a change from last year?
I'm a little slower getting around to this just because now last year we were like this, the first day we were allowed to have contact and be in with the kids. We were boom. And I had the full off season program worked out, lifting, skill works, open gym, everything. And what I found out was of like my like top. So if you go with your top players at each respective grade level, so I usually open it up 7th grade through 12th grade of like your top players at each grade level. I would venture to say 90% of them played football for me. So I'm getting one kid per grade level that is a starter at that grade level. And then my numbers were so low, I'm getting one kid that's like borderline making the roster at that grade level. So I got more kids as it went on and got closer to the end of football season and junior high football went over.
Yep.
So rather than, you know, beating our heads into the wall, I'm waiting a little bit longer this year to get that rolling. Couple that with the fact that I'm now coaching golf too. Mm-hmm. And we're currently doing pretty well. We're in first place by a point in the SBC. So I'm trying to make sure everything's going well and those kids are getting the right opportunities and getting the correct repetitions of practice, whatever. Golf's way easier than basketball. But I typically like to do it. My biggest thing is not necessarily the time, the morning, after school, or in the evening. My biggest thing is if you're doing multiple things like a lift and a workout, you have to piggyback it. Because kids hate if you lift every morning and then they got to come back after school and do a workout. And do not do in the preseason more than I don't like doing more than 2 hours of anything, even open gym. If you can get them in for a lift in 45 minutes and get a little workout in 30 minutes and get them out in an hour 15, that's perfect. Less is more in the preseason. You have to do stuff, but you don't want them to get that burnout early on. What's your philosophy on that?
100%, man. If I'm going to lift, it's always back to piggyback, like you said. If I just want to get shots up and do some drill work, we've done the morning sessions for an hour, which runs about 45 minutes. I plan an hour so they can go shower and stuff. But I've done that after school in the morning. I've done the evening. But no matter what, I always try to keep it an hour and a half. And really, court time, I try to keep between an hour and 45 minutes. And so then if we go an hour and a half, that means we go and lift or something like that. But for me, a lot of it is just shot taking. Like you said, we don't have a ton of kids. We're not fortunate enough to be a big Division I school where we have 10, 15 kids who are going to participate and play minutes in our 9 through 12 program. So for me, when we do our drill work, like you said, we try to keep it to 45 minutes to an hour. And I try to do some different things every day, try to change the drills up a little bit. I don't know about, I want to see what your philosophy is with that. I try to change the drills so the kids don't feel that it's just so boring that it's over and over again. You try to do a few different things, even though it's the same concept. But I've been breaking it down and doing more like, all right, we're going to do just even 5 to 10 minutes of dribbling, finishing at the rim for 5 to 10 minutes. And then we try to get shots up, both stationary and moving. And we'll talk some about those drills here in a minute. But that's kind of how I break down my skill work. Do you, Toby, focus on a skill per each session? Like, are you a dribbling skill this day? And then, I don't know, a passing drill the next day? I just feel like dribbling and shooting is so important in the game of basketball that I just do it every single time.
Every day I try to hit the three main components that go into offensive basketball, because once it gets closer to the season, we actually do some breakdowns defensively too, and I started incorporating that after last season because my team really struggled to play man-to-man defense, and some of that was the injuries, and when people get hurt, you have to slide everyone up a spot, and they're guarding guys that they're simply not ready to guard. But we also fundamentally needed to work on some defense, so I think in the preseason, it's important to work on offense. Get the kids excited about the season. That's what they want to work on. So every day we hit dribbling, we hit finishing, we hit shooting, and we rotate the type of drill every week what we're doing in that. So we did skill sessions. We did biweekly skill sessions, one open gym. So we had 3 nights that we were doing stuff. And then so you would do the workout on Monday. We keep data on all your workouts, so all your makes, all your times. All your reps, you learn all the drills Monday. That way, when you go through it the next day, Wednesday or whatever day that may be, it's smoother. Everyone knows what we're doing. It's the same thing we did Monday. You keep your data, you try to improve. Boom, the next week, it's a different workout. We have 3 cycles. So you end up going through the cycle twice in the month or something like that, twice in the 2 months leading up to the season. So that way, they've done a workout, a different workout, 4 times. And so when kids always get in the gym on their own or have time, I've seen my kids using the workouts that we've done in the cycles because it doesn't get monotonous for them, but they get mastery of it because they've done it frequently enough.
Good, good. So here's a question for you. So something we do in here at Oak Harbor, when we do dribbling skill, I will mix in, we'll do some two ball on certain days, but we do a lot of one ball. And when we do a lot of one ball, I try to do a lot of multi moves. So let's just say we start in the baseline or sideline, and it's all like you're gonna go two dribbles, you're gonna cross over between your legs, or cross or sorry, go between your legs, cross over, and then you're going to continue with it. And you kind of continue at an angle across the court, because you're kind of just always doing the same move over and over again. A lot of times I just make my guys actually go straight ahead. And it's not so much mastery or looking great in the move. It's just starting to get comfortable with the ball. Between legs crossover, or just I do what I call scissors, double between the legs, and make them just like skip almost down the or go across the court doing it. I try to do a lot of multi-dribbling things. And sometimes my coach comes in, my JV coach or freshman coaches, and there's kids or even my younger kids are struggling with it. I feel though that if you do these multiple moves at a time, when you want to make your one move in a game, which I do preach, like you can't make multiple moves in a game, kids. Like you, that's so hard to do. Like it's one and done. But the reason we're doing multiples is if you can snap two of them in practice, snapping one of them in a game should be much, much easier. Like, is that something that you incorporate in your dribbling, or how do you do your dribbling in preseason?
I like that philosophy. I think that makes total sense. I'm different in the sense that I think kids get caught up too much in what they're seeing on social media, and they got cones set up and chairs set up, and somebody's got a broom and they're poking you with the broom, and I'm doing triple dribble combo Jedi Hezzy crossover into a step.
Dude,
back
you need
three.
To call a time. You need to call a timeout right now. You're going, brother. You gotta call a timeout here, man. You gotta take 30 seconds and go. You're
I gotta use toilet paper timeout about the training of basketball.
You need to go. You got the broomstick out. Let's go. Come on. Here we go. Let's hear it. Come on.
All right. Here, I'm using my toilet paper timeout. The things that you see on these social media, I've seen like dribbling gloves. I've seen people put garbage bags over the ball because it helps your feel. I've seen, brooms. The stuff you wouldn't believe. I saw one guy in like a rolling office chair, like rolling along next to the guy. And I'm like, oh my Lord, what are we doing? I'm just a little more old school like that. When I coached under Coach Boo Heidelberg, he hated the gun. Okay. He hated it. But I kind of agree with him. I agree with this. He's like, they can't catch a pass from their teammates. He's like, why would they practice catching it from a machine? And I'm like, you're so right. And he's like, we throw terrible passes into their feet all the time. Why not practice just a simple reversal and get used good at that? And I was like, you're right. You're so right. He's like, gun's mm-hmm. stupid. I was like, yeah, you're right. Gun is stupid. So if we think the gun's stupid, go on social media and look at all these people. I mean, the trainers might even be wearing their Superman capes, jumping up on top of the backboard, sitting on top of the backboard with windshield wiping. I mean, it's stupid. And then they charge you $500 for 5 minutes. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't get it. And everyone has to have a trainer. I'm done. I get it. I know you're trying to get better. I know some of these trainers
Coach,
do a really
second
good
horn,
job.
Get back on the court.
But holy cow, some of them are just grabbing your money.
All right. So let's go back to your dribbling here. Now that
I don't even remember what I was talking about.
I know you don't, man. But you went, man. I love it. I love it. Let's get back. So your skill sessions, your dribbling. Give me a couple drills. You said you had three different kind of sessions of skills. Give me one 5-10 minute drill that you did of the three, and give it to the fans here so that maybe somebody listening can go home and do it on their own.
Let me pull up. I was actually trying to pull up the workout program that I have. Okay, so a staple in our program is we call them ball handling pyramids. So if you've ever done like a pyramid in the weight room where you go, it's a pyramid set. So you do all the way up and then all the way back down. So like if you were bench pressing, you did a bench press pyramid, you would do adequate weight for one rep, then two, then three, then four, then five, then six, and then you go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, back down.
Yep.
So what we do is ball handling pyramids, and we do the simplest moves for ball handling pyramids. So we will start with in and outs. We'll go walk the dog. We'll go crossovers. We'll go between the legs. We'll go behind the back. We'll do half spins. Okay.
Walk the dog real quick for people that don't know what walk the dog means, Coach. What's walk the dog for you?
Some people call it Magic Johnson's. It's where the ball's out in front of you and you're bringing it back behind you and turning your hand over. It's all about hand placement. Turn the ball over, then you push it back out in front, coming back. And our rule when we do pyramids is if you do not lose the ball at some point during your pyramid, you are not getting any better. So they are just whipping and throwing the basketball as hard as they can. It's stationary. But they, once they finish the rep, they must do a pound dribble, and we do it for each hand. So if you're doing windshield wiper, it's one windshield wiper and you pound the thing one, then you're going set two, it's pyramid set, two windshield wipers, one, two, pound. Then you're going 1, 2, 3, pound, 1, 2, 3, 4. We usually do pyramids of about six. Then you go back down, pound, other hand. Pyramids are something that's really helped some of our kids with their ball handling, specifically Jackson McNulty. He said, ever since I've done ball handling pyramids, it's really helped me. And he said, of course, like some of the trainers he's talked to and stuff are like, oh, stationary ball handling's outdated. You're never going to be stationary in a game dribbling. You're always going to be moving. And I'm like, it's about feel. It's about reps. It's about confidence. What's your opinion on that?
I agree with you. I think me and you are very cut from the same cloth. You know, much younger than I am, Toby. Obviously, I still look pretty good for my old age. I got the grays coming in and all that.
You're darn
kind of
right,
stuff.
You do. You appreciate are darn
that.
Right.
Appreciate that, buddy. Even though we are basically two different generations, I think because we were raised in the gym by coaches and have been around the game so much and we have consumed so much knowledge, like, don't lose fact of what made players great back in the 80s and 90s. Like, those dudes can play. Let's not get crap twisted. Are we more athletic now? Yes, because we've learned to, like, work on our speed and our hips and small things that we've learned. But don't get things twisted. The dudes in the 80s and 70s and 90s can dribble the basketball, and they were doing stationary dribbling. And if you turn on YouTube, Google Seth Curry, and the first thing he does is he's doing two ball stationary dribble on the baseline. There is a reason for it. But the key to it is what you said. If you aren't willing to go so hard that you lose the ball, you will never get better at dribbling. You have to go hard at it. And that's something I preach to my kids at Biddy Camp. And this, like, you're not going hard enough because you haven't lost the ball yet. You should lose the ball. And that's the point of stationary dribbling. This point of stationary dribble is not to sit there and go one, two, pound
right.
It. One, two, pound it twice. It's point to be down in the stands and go so hard that you are sweating without having to move. And yes, you're right. You don't stationary dribble in a game very often. And if you do, it's the point guard and his back's turned and he's protecting it Magic Johnson style. And he's looking at us because we want to play call it. But ultimately, though, the point of it, like you said, is to get the feel and to get the rhythm. Making these kids count up and down, they lose track of their count. I guarantee it, don't they, Tobes? They
all the time.
All the time. Yeah. And so if they can't count while they're dribbling, how are they supposed to run a play, guys? And so, like, these are things that, like, sometimes it's too simple. No, it's not. Sometimes it's just the way it needs to be done. Because I tell you what, I grew up with it. You grew up with it. Our dads won a heck of a lot of games doing it. I'm not gonna change the world up because somebody told me all of a sudden stationary dribbling is not good. And it is. And so we do stationary dribbling in my practice. We actually incorporate it into our finishing drills. So, like, we'll do mic-ins and drop steps, and a kid's doing mic in our drop steps and the other kid's doing stationary ball handling the dribble, and then they switch. And so it's an easy way just to keep kids moving. And we do that a lot in our practice. So I'm with you, brother. I think stationary dribbling, it's not, you don't need to spend, don't spend a half hour on it. Spend 10 minutes. That's all you need to do. 5 minutes. It's a warm-up type thing. It doesn't have to be this big, well, we're going to do a half hour dribbling. And no, it's 5-10 minutes of dribbling because you're going to dribble more in the other drills.
Talk me through one of your, like, go-to shooting drills that you like to do. Because we kind of touched on dribbling.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just important to get the reps, in our opinion. It doesn't matter if you're moving, if you're stationary. The overriding idea that we're trying to convey to the audience is use it as a way to build their confidence, make sure they get repetitions, and use it in a manner that is efficient with time, too. Like you said, coupling it with another drill, and make sure you're going hard. No matter what you're doing with dribbling, you have to be willing to lose the ball. That's a big thing that we're screaming at the kids about.
100%, 100%. It's not a mistake. It's getting better. All right. So shooting drills. So after you said what Coach Buhai said about hitting the gun and passing it, I have realized that my favorite drills, I use the gun, but it's all teammate to teammate passing.
Okay.
So, like, for example, we'll go, like, think of shell, you know, four out. You have the corners and the top. And so, like, and I do a lot of, I use the gun, but during the gun, I always incorporate, like, you get one shot before the action occurs. And so it just kind of gets the timing in my drills a lot better. So, for example, like, if I have four kids, we'll go shell, we'll go four out. So the gun will go elbow to elbow. And so kick out to the first kid, he shoots it. On the second shot, he catches it, and he is driving straight down the lane, hard as he can, for a corner three, kicks to his teammates. Teammate shoots it. The gun goes to the other side. The teammates switch, and then they just keep repping with it. So you always get a shot, but then you got to drive hard and kick it to a teammate. And then, obviously, we'll switch sides, and then we'll go out of the corner and do a similar set like that. But that's just one simple one. It's just a drive and a kick out. And like you said, but – one of the things I preach on my drive is, are you looking at the rim or are you just looking at your teammate? But it also incorporates that you're not just catching the ball off the gun. You have to catch it from your teammates, like you said.
Yeah.
Make a good pass. But then both guys get a shot every time, which I kind of like, and then they're moving. So that's just one simple drill that we go to a lot, and it's really quick and it's really easy to do. And you could have eight kids at the gun, and it goes back and forth, and it moves pretty quick.
I like that a lot. I think the gun's great in the sense that it – reduces the amount of rebounding that you have to do.
Correct.
And I don't know what it is about the gun, but people get excited when the gun comes out. That's a real thing. The kids get excited when the gun comes out. So I like that drill. I like that you have the kick out component of it. A thought that I never really harp to my kids that I'm going to be stealing from you is, are you looking at the rim or looking at your teammates? Everyone can make that pass if you're staring at them the whole time. You got to be looking at the rim. Then at the last second you draw, you get your eyes on your teammate, deliver a good pass. So I like that a lot. Sweet.
And I will admit, I pull a little trainer off of YouTube and get a pad out every once in a while and try to beat
and get the broom out. Yeah. Are you wearing a gorilla suit while you do it and a Superman cape? And
sometimes I make weird noises at the kids, you know, but that's just me being goofy. So, no, I do try to body them a little bit and get off of them. But we'll go from that, just simple dribble or dribble a kick out into a dribble handoff. So then we'll dribble handoff and then the guy gets a shot off of it. And so it's the same action, but it's just a different feel. And so all of a sudden you're getting two movements in, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes of drill work. And every time both kids get a shot, I always try to get multiple shots up if I can, not just one shot for one kid. If I can get two shots off somehow, I always try to do that. And that's something I've gotten pretty good with incorporating with it. And actually, if I there's sometimes I actually have to get two shots off to kind of get the timing right, because I don't want the machine to be too slow. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense.
If any coach uses a gun, sometimes when you put it at five or six, it takes too long. And then the kids are there and they're just like standing, like
waiting.
Yeah. And that's not game like. Like, I do try to make sure that they catch the ball when the machine kicks it out. And so that's sometimes why I incorporate that extra shot, because the machine is kicking out quickly. Because I don't know how many basketballs you put in the gun, but I feel like sometimes there's like 20 balls in my gun. There's not, because you can't do that. But there's like five sometimes or six. And it's just like, there's way too many basketballs in this machine right now. But
and you love it. I can see it on your face. You're smiling. You love the chaos and getting the shots up. You love it.
Oh, I it's chaos. Correct. Correct. Yeah. So those are two simple drills I do. Another one I like to is so I just make the kids run, arc run. So like the machine starts in the corner, the kid gets, and this is where it goes Coach Buhai's theory, because he's not catching the ball, but he's not catching it straight on. So he catches the first one in the corner, and then the player has to run all the way to the top of the key as the machine's going.
Okay.
And so now they're catching it on the run and have to pivot, and then they have to go back, and then they go back for one more. So they get like four reps at it. And by the time they're done with it, like they're like gassed with it.
Gassed a little bit, yeah.
And it takes them, like when our new kids come in, it takes them some understanding of, listen to me, kids that are players, coaches, anybody that's listening. You need to learn to hurry your shot without rushing it. It's the stupidest comment I can make, but you got to learn to shoot fast, but not throw the ball at the rim because you're shooting fast. Like, you have to play fast, but know how to play fast. And I have kids in that, when we did that drill first, they're throwing the ball. They're not, their feet are going sideways. I'm like, you're not trying to shoot it. You're more worried about the other ball getting out of the machine. That's the point of this, guys. You have to focus on your shot here so that when you do go to the corner, your footwork's there. And if you're late, you're late, but like, you have to shoot the ball correctly. I'm trying to speed you up so that you feel game-like.
One of the things that I like to do on my scouting reports, especially, I did a lot at Heidelberg. I have a good Heidelberg story with a pad, by the way, about hitting people with the pad. I'll come around to that.
Yeah.
Is what side do shooters like to catch the ball on to make three-point shots? Because everyone has a different shot. It's amazing. It's like a golf swing. It's like a baseball stance. It's like someone throwing a football. Like, everyone does it a little bit differently. And I've seen really good shooters bring it from the left side of their body up across their face. Look at Kevin Durant. He shoots it from the side of his face. Some shooters, because of the way Coach Harvey, who was the assistant at Heidelberg, the other assistant while I was at Heidelberg, shot it from like the right side of his ear right here. And he wasn't as effective when he had to bring the ball, from across his body, if he caught it left, and bring it all the way over to the right. Jaden Crutcher was on our AAU team. He shot it from the left side of his face. So we wanted to make sure all the passes that we got him to, like in our pistol series, the pass was always coming. If you think about this seriously, it's coming from right to left, so it can be all one motion for him. And those are things that matter. And that's something as a coach, you need to be watching on the gun. Your good shooters, are they better catching it one direction or another? That's a real thing. If you really want to get into the detail of that. Do you have anything you want to add on to that before I get into the story?
No, I think you nailed it. And that's also why I do it both ways at one time, because I want the kid to feel. And I always ask them, like, which way was easier for you? Because I want them to think about that too. Like, one way was easier. Which way was it? Well, when I was going this way. Okay, so think about that in the game then. Like, try to position yourself into that. And think about now, like you said, why is there a reason behind it? Think about why I'm putting you on this side of the court and running you this way now. Like, there's rationale behind a lot of these things. And so, but if you want to become an elite shooter and a great shooter, you go both ways. You become Curry, and you're able to go left, right, and it does not matter because your form is just whack straight on. And so, but no, that's a very real thing, and it's something as a young coach. If you're a young coach, learn from what Toby just said. Set your players up for success and give them that pass that goes directly into it. But also work both ways, like I was talking about with the gun. All right, story time. Let's hear Heidover basketball in the pad. Let's go.
So we would break up, do guards posts like a lot of people do. And I'd be down there with the guards, and Coach Buhai is like, gotta get tougher. Get the pad out and beat the crap out of these guys as they're going in for their finishes. Like, all right, I can do that. I'm not a big guy. But I would make sure to absolutely flatten every single guard on their first rep. Like, I'm talking every ounce of my weight, and I am just knocking people out of the air, just crushing people. And that is like my Greg Maddux curveball. So I'm just setting people up for me to place this fastball that I'm about to throw. So shout out Isaiah Young and Dylan Woods, because I would always get them on this. So I'm just crushing people. Like, the first time through, crush them. Then maybe I do like a normal one, hit them regular. Then I just blast them again. And then about at some random point during the drill, I would really wind up like I'm going to hammer them, and I would not touch them at all. And that messed them up more than anything you wouldn't believe. And Coach Buhai would look down and see our all OAC guards going up like they're going to get hit. And I just basically pull the chair with
the
pad, and they just shoot the worst air ball layup you've ever seen. And he would get so mad at them. And it was so funny. And they just laugh because they knew, like, he didn't see what you were doing before that, just hammering us. And then you don't do that. But that was really funny. They were always good sports about it.
I don't know if this sounds terrible or it's just the way I've grown up. I do that a ton. when we do any sort of drill and we get the pad out, we are constantly like checking them hard, tapping them, and then just pouring the chair on them. Because, like, especially nowadays, like, kids are all taught to like run off or run away from the ball, like to treat you as like, I'm going to avoid the contact to let you fall, because too many times kids are trying just to run kids over. And so it's a joke, but it's a real drill to do. And like, we work on it in our program. Like, I'm a little bigger than Toby, for all you listeners, probably twice the size of him. So you can have a good laugh about that. So I don't have to put as much weight into my pads when I hit kids, but I take a couple of shots from my post players every once in a while. Like, I think the guards kind of like, hey, you got to get one in on Coach here real quick. And I've taken a couple. I'm like, okay, my wrist hurts. I'm going to step off. Like, JV coach, step on in. Freshman coach, get in here with the other pad, because I got to take a break. My knee hurts or locked up or something. It's what happens when you get old, Toby.
Does Hanyo finish while he's hitting him with the pad, or is that?
Yeah,
that
yeah, it's a real thing. It's a real thing. Well, you talked about it though, man. Like, that's something we incorporate in preseason is finishing drills. And we could go on another hour about finishing drills, but like getting your, like, Dan Dockish, baby, get your chin on the rim, get your eyes up, see the rim. Like, I still like use that phrase all the time, like, chin on the rim. And I always have kids like, what do you mean? I'm like, put your chin up. And they're like, oh, you can see the rim now, can't you? Oh yeah. Like, that's, it's a player, guys. Like, it's eyes up, eyes on the rim. And every coach has their own saying, but I use that Dan Dockish one a ton. Get your eyes up and yeah, finish, because dang it, you got to make a layup when you drive, buddy.
That's awesome. One thing I want to do, because we're about done. We about covered a little bit of shooting, covered a little bit of ball handling, covered a little bit of finishing. I don't want to use another toilet paper timeout, but in youth basketball, teach your kids to make layups different ways than just the classic, like, okay, right hand, right knee up, like there's a string attached to it and lay it in. How many times are you going to do that layup the higher you go up in basketball? On a breakaway. That's it. Like, you have to get used to jumping off both feet and scoring with either hand. So one thing that we are big on is inside hand finishes. So it's the opposite of the hand that you're supposed to be doing. And that's because shot blockers like to come to your outside shoulder most of the time and jump behind and get it. So we work on a lot of inside hand finishing. We work on goofy layups, which is jumping off the wrong foot and finishing with the correct hand. Like, this is stuff that you can start at a young age. Once they can make the standard layup, which is what they should be doing in fourth grade, like, we don't need to be doing standard layups only all the way up through eighth grade. Like, you need to work on jump stop shot fake finishes, inside hand finishes, things like that. Honestly, if you get good at inside hand finishes, you might disagree with me. I haven't seen nearly as many reverse layups as I did. Like, I saw a lot of reverse layups in the early 2000s. The inside hand, in my opinion, has kind of taken over for that reverse in the last 10 to 15 years.
I 100% agree with you. I almost say reverse, and that's what my kids naturally do a lot. Now, we still work on the old school, like, go baseline, reverse layup.
Yeah.
But if you're coming straight down the lane, that is the reverse layup, and you're right. It's the inside hand. There's a little flick to it, which is almost reverse-esque. But no, you're right, man. And finishing multiple ways, and it's going to be ugly for some kids.
Yes, it's horrible.
And as a coach, like, a lot of people are like, whoa, these guys can't do it. You got to keep doing it, man, because your top five need to get better at it. And your bottom five, if they get better at it through the year and then next year, maybe they're even better. Like, you don't know, but like, you got to get reps with everybody. And you can't just, like you said, be simple with it. Like, it can't just always be this. Like, we do something called wing attack, and we are constantly changing the finishing move and how it looks. And there's a couple times like it just becomes a flat out travel for every single player. But over time, it just all of a sudden two guys catch on to it. And then the goal is that one time in the game when they're out of control, they hit it and you're like, there it is. That's why we rep it. And I do with my younger kids a lot. And I got two little boys, and we do a lot of those things when we do finishing drills is we challenge them. I actually let them, it's stupid, but something simple at the end of the preseason, guys, as a coach, like, let your kids like go play horse and let them just go be imaginary, like, create something up, like make it a basketball play, but do whatever you want, like, spin three times and try to do opposite foot, opposite hand, reverse layup. And then they laugh and they have a little fun with the game. But that's something I let my boys do at the end of it. Like, it's creative, baby. Just go have fun with it and just challenge each other to do, like you said, weird step, weird foot, opposite hand, opposite foot. As long as it's looks like a basketball play, don't go shoot over the backboard, don't go from half court and chuck it and hit the ball back in your face. That's something simple to have fun at the end of preseason for any coach. It's just, I call it imagination, man. Go have fun and play basketball, create some memories.
Sweet. Let me ask you this. What's your opinion on floaters? Do you teach floaters? Do you not like floaters? Because I've been around some coaches that are like, that's a terrible shot. It's a flick type shot. I've been around coaches that actually teach it and like it, think it's necessary. I think my personal opinion, it depends on the kid. Like, I don't want to be teaching Jackson McNulty, who's 6'4" and athletic, to shoot floaters, because that's not a shot he needs to be taking, because he can just overpower people to the rim with his athleticism. But a guy like Tommy McDonald, for me, who's an undersized point guard, I am working on floaters with him because that's a good shot for him. He gets a lot of paint touches, but it's tougher for him to get the ball on the rim. So where do you stand on floaters? Because I've heard coaches that are strongly against it, coaches that are strongly for it. I find myself somewhere in the middle.
I'm going to agree with you. I'm in the middle too. As you're asking me that question, I'm trying to go back and think, like, do I teach it? Teach it? Yeah, I teach it. I don't think we get after it though. Like, are you talking like straight down the lane, 8-footer, like up in the air, like, pew, is that what you're talking about?
Are you talking about
more of a, like a baby hook type floater? Like, I feel like I'm teaching more of my kids to like be outside your body. Like, I just think a true floater is such a hard shot, especially because you're beating somebody off the dribble. You're kind of going straight. Like, when you say floater, I think like the straight ahead, like teardrop.
Okay. Yeah.
Over. That's what I think of when people say floaters. So I'm more teaching my kids, use the outside baby hooks, get wide with it. Like, we do a drill, like, you go straight down the foul line and you have to do an outside baby hook and you're three feet from the rim.
Right, right, right.
Is that a floater nowadays? Maybe. But when you say floater, I mean, I think like the straight ahead floater, and we rep it, but it's not a high priority in my program. No, I think it's a hard shot.
The floater that you're talking about, like straight down the lane, teardrop, one leg, you're shooting it way up and over, almost like a running layup, like a runner. Okay. Mm-hmm. I would call that a runner more than a floater. I do not teach that. I think that is hard. And I think that is the one that the coaches that are against it think of when you say floater. What I'm talking about is like Tommy, okay, my point guard, my undersized point guard, gets into the lane. He gets past his guy. He is under control at anywhere from 12 to 8 feet. Okay. And rather than stopping and shooting a pull-up jump shot, which is a little bit slower, could get blocked from in front or behind, when the ball's in the middle of his body, he's just quickly getting the ball up on the rim with a little push shot. Okay. Like that type of runner. So envision him getting past somebody, little jump stop, and he's getting it, getting his shot off up and high. It's not a running one-legged teardrop.
Yeah, I think when you explain it that way, that is something I definitely teach my two sons. I teach them that. I think it's, once again, it's another tool in the toolbox, and not every kid can use them all. And so you rep it, and you see who can do that move. And I know exactly what you're talking about. You get in the lane, you jump stop, but you know you got to go now, but you don't have enough time to elevate. So it becomes this like quick little flick almost, throw it. Throw up to the rim, but it's not because you're controlled. No, I'm not against that shot. I definitely think it's a hard shot. I'd almost rather do like a one dribble pull up 10-foot jumper and just try to elevate right now. I think when you get in the lane, I think you got to be quick with your decisions. And if your player enjoys that move and does it well and does it quick, then let them have it, man. And that's the thing I think me and you are on this boat with, like, let your players be the players. Like, I hate it when I see coaches yell at every single kid to jump stop for layups. Like, no. Like, these two kids need to jump stop because they're out of control. These three can go elevate, and then those two can do whatever they want because they know and have the skill level right now to do it. You can't make everybody fit your box, man. It doesn't work. And so I like that move. I know your move you're talking about now, like that floater. It's quick, it's sharp, and I think it's effective, but only a handful of kids, 7 through 12, probably are good at it. And usually it's the smaller ones too because they got to be quick with their shots.
You have to have something from 15 feet to 9-8 feet. You have to have something, whether that's a pull-up jumper, whether it's a floater, you got to have something.
Such a hard range.
It's a hard range, but when you get to that point, you have collapsed the defense. In high school basketball, if you get to that range, that is collapsing the defense because it's very hard for these kids to get all the way to the rim. So what we say is once you collapse it, you better be kicking for an open three or that ball better be on the rim. We can't get nothing out of that. So whatever you can do to get it on the rim, because if you get it on the rim, that means that the defender at the bottom that's guarding the post guy has to step up, and it gives us a chance for the offensive rebound. And if he does not step up, then that shot should be easier for you. But you have to figure out how to get that on the rim. This is why college coaches are after three-level scorers. They got a lot of guys that can make threes. They got a lot of guys that are good at going to the basket. I would say the next layer of guys are good at spot-up threes and getting to the rim. Nobody can do all three of it. There's very few three-level scorers. And it doesn't have to be you're doing Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan footwork in the mid-range and making tough shots and all this and that. You got to have a floater or a pull-up going one direction. That way you are respected at all three levels.
Time out. Toilet paper one.
Here we go.
I cannot stand watching all these kids. Google Kobe, Google Jordan, and then go to the court and act like they can do these three pivot series, fadeaway 15-foot jumpers, and think they're sweet at it. Like, I'm sorry, the NBA is taught and coached and played at a different level than high school sports. If you pivot three times in our league against me, I am sending a double team. And if you not getting a double team, there is a reason that you're allowed to pivot three times and take a crappy fadeaway jumper. Kobe and Jordan are two of the top five players ever in the history of basketball. And you think as a 16-year-old, you can go to the gym or the park and work on the sweet fadeaway jumper that Jordan had? Get out of here. And if you're good enough to do it, I'm double teaming your butt and you don't have time to do it anyways. So learn to make a better move than a three pivot fadeaway jump shot. Done.
I saw a clip on social media that was like, this guy's a natural scorer. This guy's a natural bucket. And all it is like some guy at an open gym taking like terrible contested mid-range shots and making it. And it just cracks me up. Like, That stuff is so hard to do. Less than 1% of basketball players can do that. And it's like, oh yeah, if I want to be a bucket, that's what I got to practice. Like, no, you got to get good at two things. Okay. One thing that gets you on the court and one thing that you can fall back on if your first thing's not working that night. That's it. Get good at two things.
Man. Fadeaway jumpers, baby. Love them. Three pivots. Hey, another fun quick story here. So back in the day when I was younger, like you, before I had kids, I'd go work at college camps all the time. And I worked at Michigan State for Coach Izzo for like three straight summers. Absolutely loved it. Every moment of it. The guy's fantastic. Like, love Michigan basketball because of that camp. Michigan State basketball, sorry, because of that camp. This is something to think about, and this is a philosophy issue. I remember watching him take his whole team and do like this wing attack series, and I kind of do it nowadays too. You know, they catch and they reverse pivot and they, whatever. They do a bunch of stuff. They catch, they shoot, all these things. Finally, Izzo turns, and because all of us coaches are helping the camp or sitting there watching practice at 6 a.m. because we're all stupid and we want to just consume knowledge. And we're all just like, eyes are barely open. But finally, a coach goes, Coach, like, we've been here for 4 days. You've never once gone to the post and worked on post work with your post players. And Izzo goes, well, what do you want me to teach him? A reverse pivot, like step through? He's like, yeah. Or he goes, like, a drop step? He's like, yeah. He's like, he yelled at a post player. He's like, hey, Tony, do this one. And it was on the wing. He caught and he reverse pivot, squared up. And then he drove. And Izzo looked at the head coach and goes, like, that reverse pivot? And the coach goes, yeah. And then next player comes up and he has to catch it. And he kind of drop steps. Like, he catches it with his back to the defender and, like, just catches it, drop steps and spins. He's like, you mean that drop step right there from the wing? And the coach is like, yeah. He's like, it's the same footwork, guys, from 3 feet to 10 to 20 feet. Like, you can call it post work and guard work, but it's footwork, man. And I remember, like I was like, wow, like, this is amazing to me. And it's something I've carried with my entire life, but nothing but major respect for Coach Izzo. Cause, like, he was just so bold about it too. Like, you mean this and this and this? He goes, yep, we worked on that. Sorry, we didn't put it in the post. He goes, but the post players can do it. The coach was just like, and then he took his little pen and wrote something down, probably something stupid, like, I'm the dumbest coach in the world or something, and circled it or whatever. But
that's a great story.
Oh,
that's
God.
Awesome.
I love basketball. I wish, you know, football's king. Let's not lie about it. We talked about it at the start of the podcast. Football wins. But dang it, when basketball season starts to come around and college basketball starts up and we get to start in high school, I have a different energy. And talking with it every week with you, man, I just – born and raised into this sport, man, I absolutely love it. And it makes me smile every time we have this conversation.
What are we – we got to start thinking about, and if the audience has good ideas, let us know. What do we need to do to hype up when the Rockets and Tigers play each other this year? Because it's early in the year this year. I believe it's in December.
Christmas present after Christmas, the Rockets and the Tigers, December 28th.
Look at, well, it's circled on Sweet's schedule. He is ready to go for that. Maybe he won't hit 9 threes in the first quarter of this game, but that's
the goal
to
is to hit. The goal is to hit 10. If you want to come see
the
Rockets,
legitimately hit 9 threes in the first quarter.
That's facts. That is 100% facts. for being a post player, we talk about this a lot in the podcast. I love shooting threes.
Now, this is not me opening the door for this. We all know you love shooting threes.
I love it.
We know.
I love the bing bongs. I love the fact that you can get 3 points instead of 2 points. It's basic math, man. It's money ball. You know, get the guys on the bases, you get more runs. If I get more threes up and make more, I'm going to score more points. Now, the key, though, is you have to make shots. And that's not always a guarantee. But that's been the running joke. Every time I go to a couple of my, you know, these games with friends like you and stuff. How many threes are you going to shoot tonight? I don't know, 30? Fire the ball up. Let's go. Shoot it when you're open. Let's get a shot off. You got to remember, Toby, early in my career, my teams struggled to get shots off because I almost made them run too much. And so now I'm the opposite. Are you open? Yes. Are you in rhythm? Yes. Is that your shot? Yes. Then shoot the basketball now. Now, if you miss four in a row, let's have smart. Let's reverse the ball. Let's try something else, you know. But early in my career, I ran too much like organization, and we couldn't get shots off. And so now I'm just like, I need shots. I'm like a kid in a candy store. Like, give me this and this and this and this and this and this. And let's fire the basketball, baby.
The crazy part is whenever a kid turns down a shot, as they're turning down the shot and you're yelling no, they're immediately turning it over on the pass out of them turning down the shot every time.
Yeah.
Every time, like clockwork. It's unbelievable.
I love it.
Unbelievable. But sweet, why don't you get us out of here?
Hey, thanks for listening to Point to Post podcasts. I'm your post player, Eric Sweet, and my point guard, Toby Miller. Remember, every point guard, get your butt in the paint and get beat on like Toby did at Heidelberg. And every post player, get a rebound once in a while and just dribble the ball up the court until you get yelled at by the coach. Hey, thanks for listening to the podcast, everybody. Have a great weekend. Go get some threes up, too, in the offseason.
Bing bong.